Let's read the pasuk again, page 416. Okay, we're on page 416. Vayomer lav manaselach. What should we do? The yishtoik hayom eleinu, so that the yam should be silent. Ki hayom halech v'soer. So we discuss. Let's just focus on pasuk yudalef today. We already learned enough about pasuk yud. But over here we discussed on Friday a few small points. We learned the Rashi. Rashi says Mazois, the concept of a Moishel. Hashem is a Moishel. We discussed this theme, which we saw some of the commentators, the concept of Hoylech Vissoyer. It's getting worse. The significance of it getting worse. And we discussed the concept of the Yishtoik, silence. Silence because the yam water is associated with noise. Noise represents chaos. Chaos. And in science today, it's very fascinating how noise is a very significant indicator. They talk today, there's a lot of talk, and they're talking more and more, if you pay attention to the news, Due to the world we live in, the radiation, okay, the electromagnetic field that is in the ear. Think about it. 100 years ago, the ear was clean. There was no transmissions. Today, you can pick up in this room probably 1,000 different transmissions of every broadcast in the world. All the cell phone towers, you name it. So what? You can't touch it, you can't feel it. So the understanding is that it's totally, totally safe. Because we don't find that this low level of radiation can have any biological effect upon a person. Halavai, halavai, it's true. But the most basic instrument that is used today to determine if there is radiation in the ear is noise. You take an FM radio, and you turn it to any station. The more noise, the more static it picks up, the more of an indication that there is things going on in the ear. It's an amazing idea. Is that noise, just when it's a clear transmission, it's clear. When there is things happening, it's chaotic. A lot of things, a lot of different things competing for your attention. A lot of different signals being sent out into the world. And there's competition, and you adjust your instruments, and you hear noise. That means there's chaos. If you go back 100 years and take exactly the same instrument, I don't know all the details of how you do this, but you take an FM radio, and whatever you turn on. If you go back, let's say, 100 years, 200 years ago, and you would power it up, and you would listen, you would not hear a sound. Because the
space,
ear...
Don't you hear,
what?
Don't you hear from space?
No, you don't. No, what you're hearing is conflicting signals. What has been conflicting signals? Everyone is trying to tell you what to do. When you talk about parents, if you have a child that grows up in a home where there's this strife, and there is problems, that is very dangerous for a child because he gets one signal from his mother and he gets a conflicting signal from his father. And a child who's not yet trained to know how to deal with decision making, when you get conflicting signals, you're in a chaotic state. Noise is always in a room. You have people shouting, a shouting match. This one is suggesting to do this. This one says to do this. This one says to do that. What's the result?
Nothing.
The result is noise. Trei kole loy mishtame. Two voices cannot be heard at the same time. What does it mean we cannot be heard? Because it's chaos. You're telling me this. You're telling me this. I end up with nothing. It's not that I end up with two different ideas. Loy mishtame. I don't hear anything. It's when you don't hear anything and there is sound being produced, that is what we call noise. It's not intelligible sound. Noise is a result of conflicting signals. The yam, there's a storm. The storm is called noise. It's noise. And when you want the yam, there's chaos. Chaos is synonymous with noise. They're begging the yishtoik hayam. The yam should be silent. That doesn't make any sense. Silent, silent is a word that is used in reference to speech. You're speaking, be quiet. No, it's not so. That's not what the word really means. Noise, what the word being quiet means to put an end to chaos. When there are too many signals, you just have noise. When the chaos will come to an end, then memela, it will be silence. It's a very powerful word. We just take it for granted, like most expressions that we have in Tanakh, we take it for a granted expression, but these expressions, they're very rich. They're full of a lot of depth. To take this expression, the yishtoik hayam, the yam should be quiet, we just said the storm should come to an end, the water should subside. They have all these different expressions. Calm down. We're beating around the bush. The word literally means silence. What? Why did the Tanakh select the word silence? There's depth. There are conflicting signals. Noise is chaos. This chaos should come to an end, and we should know what to do. And that's why they say Manaseh Loch the Yishtei Kayom Yaleinu, that the Yam should be silent, the chaos should come to an end, we should have a clear understanding of how to proceed in our path. So we did already the mitzvahs, we did Rashi, we did the Radak. Let's now take a look at the Malbim. Okay, we'll come to Lekudei Shas in the Malbim, let's search through the Malbim. The Malbim, Pasuk Yud Aleph, let's go to there. Vayomru elav manas alach she'aluhu imroitze loshuv b'shuvu l'kabel alav l'leches ninenve. Here they became very religious. Now all of a sudden, 5 minutes ago, they were crying to their gods. All of a sudden, they all became now Rashi Yeshiva. They all became the Alta of Slobodka. They all turned into a Groyser Rashi Yeshiva, Groyser Bali Musar. And they're saying, do you want to do teshuvah? Here you hear what goes on over here. You go from mamish mikotze El Hakotze. And it's not a joke. The truth is, when it comes to Musar, when it comes to Baal Musar, it can happen overnight. To become a Rosh HaYeshiva, to become a Lamdan, it doesn't happen overnight. Okay, it doesn't work like that. In order to be Mechad, to be a Talmud Chacham, to know Kol HaTorah Kula, you have to burn the midnight oil. It doesn't go so fast. But to become a Mashkiach, to become Mashkiach, you don't have to sit in Harva. Unfortunately, a life experience can change you into a Mashkiach in a moment's notice. You see the light when you just see in 1 second, you connect with Hashem, and you have a reality check, immediately you know the proper derech in life, and you can serve as a role model, as a guide for other people. See, then that's what happens over here. Here they didn't become the Talmidei Chachamim, but they became overnight, in a matter of moments, they became mashkiachim in a yeshiva to give musar to even the greatest Navi Yonah, one of the greatest Navim. Shalu imreitzel loshu b'shuvu l'kabel lov l'chas l'inveh v'ulai. If he will indeed be choyze b'shuvai, perhaps they will merit that this Yeluchem Takana, page 419 Takana, al yidei sheyoshuvu imon l'chas l'choyf ha'amoylich l'ninveh, they'll be able to return to the shore that will take them to Ninveh, Oshu Yeshivu La'aretz Yisrael B'chazor V'chem Hayam Yishtoik Mi'aleinu. In other words, according to the Malbim, we don't know where they want to go. Maybe in fact they'll go, let's go to Ninveh. We will redirect this ship. The ship was planned to go to Tarshish. Change course. We'll change the coordinates. We're going to go now to Ninveh. It's all Hashem wants, to go change those dials in the cockpit, that we should go to plot a course to Ninveh instead of plotting our course to Tarshish. Or maybe we'll go back home. We'll go back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, let's first do the Lekutei Shas. Okay, one beautiful Maimon Chazal here in Lekutei Shas on the bottom page 416. Vayoymru Elehem Sa'uni. Wait, how do we get that? That's very further on. That's so. The pasuk Yud Aleph, Emelim Sauni v'Hatiluni El Hayam. So why here is this on pasuk Yud Aleph? Yeah, article makes a misprint. Pretty good, huh? It's ready. The next pasuk. So we have to leave. Let's leave it then. Okay. I thought it was Moisir Nefesh. Okay, we'll leave for the next. We'll put it aside for the moment. Let's
now go and proceed to, a lot of these things are connected to the next pasuk. Let's right away jump into the next pasuk. Pasuk Yudbeis and Yudgimel, Vayoymer Alehem. So he responded, So'uni Vahatiluni El Hayam. Now that's, this word So'uni is always, you hear every so often, you pay attention, the Darshanim, they love this word. Lift me up. Lord, make me high. Who said that? Very good, right, that's right. So'uni, Lord, raise me high, make me high. Vahatiluni al hayam, and then throw me into the sea. That doesn't make, that's an oxymoron. If you're going high, if you're being raised up, then what does it mean? You're being cast down into the sea. So we have to understand what this means. And by doing so, v'yishtek hayam me'aleichem, the yam will be silent from upon you, but not from upon me. I have no choice but to meet my fate. Ki yodea oni, I am well aware, ki visheli, it's because of me, hasar hagadol haze aleichem, I am the cause of your suffering. Why this is coming upon you? Let's go further. Another pasuk, vayachtiru ho'anoshim. Now, what is the word vayachtiru? This is a very hard word. Literally, it means to burrow, to dig a tunnel. Isn't that what it really means? In the Mitsudo Sion, he writes inyan chafira v'chein im yachtiru v'shol. You'll dig into the grave. Or it's on the excellent, right. A person, he burrows, he digs his way into your home underneath, underground. And he listens, he quotes the post that says, the Mitzudos Tzir, on page 419, he writes, Uritzon Loimar, Heshitu Bam Shoitois Besoch Hayom, it means they rowed the boat. That's how they learn. Now, why would we use the word Vayachteru? It's a borrowed expression. When you dig, you have a shovel, and you dig into the ground and you remove the earth. To an observer who's looking on from above, it would look like they're digging, because they're in a state of panic. They are rowing, they are moving the oars. They are rowing the oars, whatever, they're moving the oars, they're churning, they're turning the oars. It looks like to an observer as if they are digging. And that is very, very fascinating, because when we began in the beginning, we learned that a sailor is called a malach. And we explain the word malach has many meanings. Amongst the many meanings, it means to mix. Mimulach tohar kodesh. With regard to the ketores, and I think also the samamonim, the ketores, it says mimulach, it shall be thoroughly mixed. Some translate the word, it shall be salted. Salt shall be added to the Ketores. I'm not sure. It says that by Shemin HaMishcho, by the Ketores. I don't remember.
The words after V'shachatka Mimena Hadei is the next line.
So that's referring to the Ketores. Mimulach Tahar Kodesh. So what does that mean? So we discussed this. It means one of two things. Either it means that it shall be salted. Al kol korboncha takriv melach. On every single sacrifice, one is required to add salt, even a mincha. I mean, especially a mincha, and that's where it says it. By a carbon, by extension. But what about the ketores? Is there such a thing that you should add salt to the 11 ingredients of the ketores? It doesn't say, we never heard of this. We know there are 11 ingredients. There's the mala oshan. Was that one of the ingredients, that an additional thing to make sure that the smoke rises in a column? Pashas is that the mala oshan was not one of the ingredients. There were 11 ingredients, and they would enhance it by putting another chemical, another thing, which would cause the smoke to rise in a perfectly straight column. But for the pasuk, it appears that there's another thing that was added to the ketores, and that is salt. It's not one of the 11 ingredients, but it's something which is part of the ketores, mimulach. But the other translation given by the commentators is, no, there's no such thing as adding salt to the ketores. Go study ancient civilization. Did they ever, when they offered incense to whatever they would do, did anyone ever add salt? We don't find they added salt. It means thoroughly mixed. Now, why does the word mulach mean thoroughly mixed? I don't know what's the etymology, but if that is correct, it makes a lot of sense why a sailor is called a malach, with a ches, not with a chaf, because he, when you row the boat and you stir the oars, to an observer, it looks like you're mixing the water. It looks like the ocean is one big food processor, and you're preparing a batter of scrambled eggs. That's what it looks like to an observer. Mimulach, you're stirring. So now look what's happening over here. We have now what?
The salt of the sea.
I don't know. You're saying this foam by stirring it, you're causing it to be a foam. Maybe that also. Okay, but you're mixing. It looks to an observer as if you're mixing. Now, if that is correct, it's something we have now another fascinating insight. Because here we have a new term for a sailor. Vayachturu. They're digging. It looks like you're a grave digger. You have a shovel, and you're digging. You're taking the oars, and you're digging. So what is it? Are you a chef, or are you a grave digger? Yeah.
Oh. You say, dig in his position, you can move or dig in a problem.
So what's the difference? The difference is panic. If you're in panic mode to an observer, you look like you're a grave digger. And if you're calm, cool, and collected, it looks like you're a gourmet chef. You're mixing. You're mixing a batter. One profession, you know, ships, it's incredible how much symbolism there is. The aniyah, the svina, all the different ideas. It's a mashal of olam hazeh. Here, the pasuk throws upon us, according at least the interpretation of the mitzudos. Not everyone agrees with his approach, but vayachteru is a very bizarre word. What does this mean? So it means to dig. That's the literal translation. Baba machteres. What are you digging? Well, when you're going and you're rowing the boat, it looks like you're digging into the water. Well, that's not true. We learned only a few days ago that when a sailor is rowing the boat, it looks like he's mixing. The answer is your frame of mind. Your frame of mind, you express yourself, you appear to an observer to have a very different attitude, a very different approach if you're in a state of panic or you are in a state of serenity. If you're in a state of serenity, it's you're a malach with a ches, with a ches. And if you're in a state of panic, you're a grave digger. You're digging deep down into the water. Oh, so you want to give another interpretation. You want to say vayachtu does not mean that they were putting the oars. He's saying very good. That's how the Mitzudos David says. He's saying in the whole new interpretation, they were taking the water out of the boat. The ship was taking in water, and that was causing it to sink, to capsize. So now they're releasing the water in a chanami. They're bailing out. Excellent. But has nothing to do with the role as a sailor. But let's just read the words of the Mitzudos. Well, you're going to see your interpretation as well. But let's first see the Mitzudos. He writes here on the side, okay, on page 419 towards the bottom, the word pasuk yud gimel vayachteru inyan chafira v'chein im yachtu b'shal. Like we find the word used in reference to digging a grave. Or digging into a grave. And what does this mean in this context? So you can say many things. But he chooses to say, Ritzon Loimar, Heshitu Bamishoitois Besochayom, into the sea. Not like what you're suggesting, that it means they bail the water out from the ship and into the water. No, they put the oars into the sea. Besochayom Vidnidme Ki'ilu choifrim bayom. Your interpretation looks like they're digging in the ship. Correct? That's I like what you're saying. I think what you're saying makes more sense. It fits better into the context of the pasuk. But for whatever reason, the Mitzudos David says it's not the pshat. The pshat over here is they're trying to steer the boat. To steer the boat in a specific direction. Then the yachtu means they are rowing in a state of panic, and to an observer, it looks like they're digging in the sea.
The context actually does say
that they are to steer the boat. Lehoshiv. Right. Because of the word lehoshiv, to restore it, el hayabosha, So then the word, the context, it means to steer. If it means just to bail the water, to get the water out, it's a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a stretch. They're trying to get, release excess water on the ship, and the mail of the ship will be able to, the people who are controlling the sails, they'll be able to maneuver the boat. It's part of the process. According to that, your interpretation, it's part of the process, but according to the Mishnah, it's just very simple. It's they're trying to steer the boat. Okay. Let's go further. They were unable, unsuccessful. Again, the pasuk repeats for a second time. Here it adds one more word. It says alehem. Did not say that word back in pasuk in aleph. Pasuk, which indicates that now it's personal. Until they discovered Yonah, well, until Yonah gave them, there's a change. Until Yonah told them what to do, Su'uni, the Hatiluni El Hayom, it's because of me, and now the people chose to ignore Yonah's suggestion. Now the Yam's attitude, giving the Yam human characteristics, this is no longer a storm, stam, a storm in the sea against the boat. Now the storm has become personal. It's Hoylech Vissoyer Alehem. They sensed that Hashem had it out for them. Yonah, why? What changed? What changed was they have a solution. The solution has been presented. Yonah is willing to be removed from, is willing to give up himself, to allow himself to be thrown overboard. They are choosing to ignore the solution that is presented. Now the Yam changes its character, and instead of generally creating chaos against the ship and against the environment, it's now focused on the people, on the sailors, the people on the ship. Now, how does that manifest itself? In what? I don't know. I have no clue. But obviously, the fact that the pasuk adds this new word, it repeats this principle, hoylech v'soyer, and adds alehem, seems to indicate is that there was change. The storm had changed. The nature of the storm has changed, where the people felt more of a intensity of hashkacha, that this is directly focused alehem, not just generally against the ship.
Well, the Abarbanel makes a point of saying by Yisrael that they ran a little test. They held on to him, they put him over the side into the water, and then they saw that everything calmed down. They lifted him up and started rocking again. So he says they picked him up, you know, they tried it a couple of times to see, and they realized that it's directly at them, but directly at him also.
Okay.
Isn't it incredible that they didn't just throw him over? Just throw him over. He's saying
so obviously, what's going on over here is we're dealing over here with religious people. We're not just dealing with thugs. We're dealing over here with people that there's someone to talk to.
Had morals.
Okay, like they say, you know, to be an apikoyres, you have to be a bal madrega to be an apikoyres. You have a person, they say foolish things. You're not intelligent enough to be an apikoyres. People, they write and they say words of kathira. You're just a shaita, you're a fool. You want to be an apikoyres? You know, you need a PhD to be an apikoyres. You just can't open up your mouth and say foolish things. Whatever, you're not an answer, you're a shaita. These are people here who are obviously intellectuals, religious people who are searching for meaning in life, for spirituality. They're searching for the truth. And they've been misguided their whole life. We have here 70 people, 70 nationalities. There's an amazing hashgacha process that's occurring here on this ship. You can imagine these 70 people, they went back to their homes. Each one wrote a book. Each one became a celebrity. Each one became a preacher to tell the world what they saw, what happened. It's an experience. And here, they're going through They're going through a process of coming close to Hashem. These people were handpicked. You know, whenever you hear these stories about Rahman Islam, carjackings and these traumatic experiences, and what happened, these events that happened, lingers on their entire life, and they'll tell you, it's like, this was meant to be. There was some type of mission that Hashem had for them, that they should be part of this event, which they would use as a springboard to teach, to inspire other, their family, other people, and even themselves for years to come.
They were very great people.
Yeah, Hashem over here obviously handpicked the people who were to be on this ship. Hashem saw the whole thing coming. Hashem knew by telling Yonah, you're not gonna. There was a divine plan. I once spoke to a very, very big Talmud Chacham. We had a conversation about if a person makes a mistake in life. Let's say a person finds himself in a very, very difficult situation. And he can say to himself, so we can say with absolute clarity, the reason why he is in this situation is because he made a foolish mistake. I made a foolish mistake. So therefore, you know what? There's no purpose in me fighting. No purpose in me going on in life with emuna that I have to be. I have to accept. If I was born into a situation and it came up, and a difficult situation in life came upon me without my choice, I was born into this situation, then I can understand. I have to have faith. I have to proceed go full force ahead in life, because it's not my fault. I didn't do this to myself. I didn't put myself in this situation. This is my nisoyon in life. Hashem, you gave this to me. I did not do anything to put myself in this situation. You brought this upon me. Obviously, I'm a person of faith. I have faith in you. If you want this to be, I accept it, and I will proceed and live a dignified life, because this is your will. But if I am in this situation because I'm a fool, and 10 years ago I've made the most foolish, stupid mistakes, and I've put myself in this situation, so what, I should now continue living my life with emunah, and I should live with very high standards, I have no one to blame for my problems other than myself. So whatever, it is what it is. So I spoke to very time talk about this, and he said to me that sometimes it's bashert to make foolish mistakes. You make foolish mistakes, and that becomes your living with your foolish decisions and mistakes in life that was meant to be. And now your destiny, your nisoyon in life is no different than had you been born into that situation. He says to me, look at Adam HaRishon. If Adam HaRishon would not have eaten from the Eitz Hadas, Chazal tell us, he would never die. He would not need to have children. There would be no need to have children because he's not going to die. He'll live in Gan Eden with Chava, and the purpose of the world will have been achieved. Really? Look what has transpired in the last 5,779 years. Look how many trillions of people have come into this world. Look how many expressions of free will. Look at the Kiddush Shem Shemayim. Look how much this world has accomplished. Are you saying that all of that is total nonsense? This is total just a waste? Because if Adam HaRishon would not have done Naver even the Eitz Hadas, he would have remained in this spiritual place called Gan Eden, and the world, there would be no humanity, nothing, and the world would just be a chaotic place, and there's just Adam and Chava. Cannot be. It was bashert for Adam to be nichshol in the chet Eitz Hadas. It was bashert. It was meant to be. Oh, but this bechira, every single man has free will. It's a good question. It's impossible to understand how you can have free will when Hashem knows what the future will bring. But in Hashem's world, in Hashem's kiloy machshavosay machshavoseichem, it is not a contradiction. Adam harishayim has committed the worst possible chait by eating from the Eitz Hadas, and he's responsible. He had free will, but it was bashert that it should happen, so that there should be this world that we live in and everything that comes along with it. That is part of Hashem's plan. So it's sometimes meant to be that you make a mistake.
The Maisa Egel wasn't based in Mikdash.
All of these things.
We wouldn't have anything.
Anything, right? All of these things. If Shaul would have killed our God, there wouldn't be Purim. How could you say that? Seriously, not make a joke at it. Purim is everything. Purim represents the full understanding of this world. The full understanding of Hashkocha Pratis, that Imo Yonochi Bitsarav, Yonochi Haster Aster Panai, even in a state of Hester Panim, I'm there. So all of that would never have happened had Shaul fulfilled Hashem's command to kill Agag. I mean, how could you? So the answer is, Shaul lost the Malchus. It was a grave transgression, but it was Bashar to happen. There are two different planes. It's impossible for a human being to make peace with that, but we have to have emunah that there does exist two different levels. There are certain things that are meant to be, and yet at the same time you are accountable for your actions, for you're responsible for your life, for the decisions that you make. So here as well, these people here, they're on the ship. These people they have experienced incredible things. And now there's just another part of another episode in this saga of what to do with Yonah. Let's see now in the forest. Let's start with these two psukim together. Let's start with the mitzvah, those seven pasuk yud beis. Pasuk yud beis sauni on page 419. Yonah says to the people on the ship, "Kichu oisi v'ashlichu oisi." He just translates it very, very simply. He's not making any big deal about this. The mitzvah is David, the word, and he just translates the word. He just translates the word "seuni" to mean just take me, to take me. And certainly the yam will be silent. I am certain, I am the cause of all of your trouble. Look, so he doesn't say that. You see, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. Is kichu? Look at the on the right, on the mitzvah siyon lekicha, inyan lekicha, take me. Does not wax homiletic or poetic to say that it means to lift me up.
That's what saw means, to lift up.
He doesn't want to say that. In this context, he wants to suggest that it means take me. Kichu osin. That's all he wants to say. El hayav halvada yishtakayom alechem. Okay, next pasuk gimel vayachteru. So we already dwelled upon that. Hayu mishtadlim im hamoshoytos. They were busy. They were very busy with the oars. Lashiv hasfir to return the shvini el hayabasha to the dry land. B'chasham shasham yalu as yoyne el hayabasha. Vem yelchu lidarkam. Let's get rid of this troublemaker. Let's return the land to dry land. Hoylech, but did not work. Hoylech v'soer aleihem. Ritzon loymar. Hor oshas hagalim. The tumult of the galim. The storm, hoy aleihem min hayabasha lemul pneihem, laharchik hasvina el toichayam. Now he wants to say the word aleihem means against them, preventing them in the going in this direction. It was preventing them from returning, steering the boat towards dry land. It was pushing them further into the turbulent waters. Let's see Rashi pasuk gimel vayachtu ha'anashim yigu v'osku. Like they wearied. Rashi is coming to add a new dimension, a new connotation that is included in the word vayachtu. It means to be to weary. Yogu v'osku,
to work hard.
Kachoyser b'machteres, as a person who digs into a underground tunnel. Over here on the Sifse Zakin, he writes. Let's hanosaf lohores al haflogas hayigia. Okay, the word vayachteru, there are many different forms of the word. Intensity. In intensity. There's binyan kal, binyan kaved. Right, but even the word itself, in other words, you can take the same word, you can preserve the shoresh of the word choyser, and you can write it in this very pasuk in many different forms. The form of the pasuk can be written in many, there are seven binyanim, and each binyan has a different connotation of intensity. The pasuk here selected the most intense usage form of this shoresh to tell you that the word doesn't just mean that they dug with intensity. Okay, that is, so he's, you know, according to the Sages of Zakenim, he's telling us the word vayach does not necessarily connote intensity. It means they were digging. But the form, the binyan of vayach to verse other possible forms of the word, that is what Rashi means, there was an intensity. That's how he understands Rashi. Maybe you can argue with the Sifrei Zakenim. You can say that the word itself, just in and of itself, the sheresh connotes a degree of intensity. It doesn't say vayachperu, they dug. It doesn't say, I don't know, you can find other words in the vocabulary to mean that they dug. The word itself connotes intensity. The Sifrei Zakenim says, I disagree. The word vayachtu does not necessarily mean intensity. You can burrow into the ground very delicately. Why then did Rashi say the word yogu? Rashi is focusing on the grammar. The fact that this form of the word was chosen versus other possible forms, that's what connotes the intensity. Let's now see the Radak. Pasuk Gimel Rad Yisrupsukim Vayomer Pasuk Yubez Vayomer Bishali I am the cause. Vavuri Kiloimar Bachet Asher Li Pasuk Gimel Vayachtu Herziku Bameshoites Lohotzi Asfina El Hayabasha to steer the boat. Ki toifes hamoshoit, they would hold on to the oar. Umalichoi bayam hu ki choiser bayam, a person that holds that rows the oar, to an observer, it looks like they are digging. The yoina samtir game vishoitin. The word vishoitin normally means to swim. Okay, so what does that mean over here? They would swim the boat. They're swimming the boat. That's how he translates Rabbi Yaakov. Let's go further. Mamash amar lehoshev lefishre mehayabosha nisa hasvina. That's where it came from. Uchishetetse el hayabosha hinehi shavo elecha. The reason why it's returning is because that's where you come from. You return to your source. He says this new question. Why does it say the word shava, to return? It should say vayachtu hanashim lehoylich. Lehoylech el hayabasha, they would steer the boat lehoylech to go towards dry land. Why are we using the word hashava, to return? So he's opening up a whole new world of interpretation. So he's saying al derech pshat, because that's where you come from. That's where you return to. Okay, leave it for that, but there is one, this point over here, v'shoitin, obviously we have a whole new interpretation, it means to swim. Yoinus, Santagam Yoinus is not coming to translate the word miloshoin of burrowing in the ground. Obviously, he does not like this approach, that when you are paddling with your oars, that you're, to an observer, it looks like you're digging. Come on, who are we fooling? You're digging, you're not digging. You're paddling oars. What do you mean you're digging? So he says the word means to swim. And just like a human being, you have arms. And when you go into the water and you move your arms, and your arms is what guides you to your destination, and that's called to swim. Swimming means you have a body, and your hands are guiding you, moving you. A ship's hands are the oars. The oar is a person, the ship is the body, and the oars are a person's hands. So just like a human being when he's in the water and he's moving his hands, how do you define that? We have a vocabulary word. It means you're swimming.
Shaitin also means sail.
the sailing. So why is it called sailing? So I think he's coming to in this context is when you're moving the oars.
If you see these old ships with the oars.
Right. They do both. They have the sails and they have oars.
Well, if there's no wind, they need
the oars.
Oars,
all right, so that's like your hands. We're giving a ship human characteristics. The body of the ship is compared to the body of a human being. And the sailors who are rowing the boat, they are called the hands, because they're tied, and to an observer, it looks like the boat is swimming. And the boat is called an aniya, milashain ani, I. That's a word that normally is used in reference to a human being. Ani Yisroi Chaisencha Ba'ilecha. Aniya. A ship is ani. The oars are the hands. When the hands are moving and you're floating in the water, you're moving and you are swimming. And that is the translation of the Targum Yonis and Uzil. It's not coming over here to tell us it means to borrow. It doesn't say that. It means, where does the word Vayachtu come to mean swimming? I don't know. Maybe that's the real word. But that's an interesting point. We'll just leave it with that. Let's now look at the Malbim.
I was just wondering when Nachshole has something to do with the name Nachshol.
Nachshol, what do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just wondering. Because
a storm?
The root, what is the word Nachshol? I mean, we never says anything anywhere, but just the thought occurred to me.
Nachshol?
So like I don't know. Nunches? You know, it just seems Nachshole maybe has something to do. Not that it means anything here, but
just. Page 418. Okay, let's take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim, Pasuk Yud Beis and Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay, Vayomer Aleihem Se'uni Vehatiluni Alayom. Return Aleimar. Ein Ani Reitzel Lashuv V'Lolechus L'Ninveh. I am in a state of rebellion. I don't want to go back home. I don't want to go to Ninveh. V'im Kein Ein Hasar Kidei LeHashiveni LeArtzi Oy LeNinveh. The purpose of the storm is not. So here we have over here a machlekes on the boat. There's a dispute between Yonah and the sailors. The sailors are of the opinion that the storm is not really trying to cause the ship to sink. The goal of the storm is to redirect the coordinates. The ship is not going to sink. The ship is, we are set to go to Tarshish. The storm is here to redirect our destination to a different location. So let's surrender. Let us surrender. Let us let the ship go. And wherever the ship is taking us, let's get with the program. Let us not resist. Jonas says, I disagree. I disagree. The purpose of the storm is to cause the ship to sink. Okay, we have a fundamental ideological disagreement. What is the storm trying to accomplish? Should we sink or should we go to a new destination? The people on the ship, they claim it's to change course. Jonas says, you're mistaken. The storm wants the ship to sink. Therefore, the only solution is to throw me overboard. And what the Malam is telling us is so fascinating, because it makes perfectly logical sense. What's going on? Yonah says, what's going on in the pasuk? Yonah says, there's a storm. And now they make a girl. And they discover Yonah, either he knows the answer or Yonah is the criminal. He's the cause. And now there's a comment. Yonah says, I'm the cause. Just throw me into the water. And they don't listen. They don't listen. Instead, they try to steer the boat back to dry land. What's going on over here? There is a disagreement. What is Hashem's message? What is the message? Is the message, Hashem wants to, I don't want to kill you all. I don't want you all to die. I want you to go to a desert island. I want the ship to change its destination. Yonah says, you're dead wrong. That's not the message. The message is Hashem wants to put me to an end. He wants to end my life. And therefore, you are all now going to be collateral damage of my demise. You're also going to die. So you know what? That's not necessary. Just throw me overboard. That way, you'll save yourselves. So they said, we don't believe you. We're right. We're right. You're wrong. The core, the storm, the message of this storm is Hashem does not want us to go to Tarshish. Hashem wants us to go either to Nineveh or to go to some other destination. And we're going to prove that we are right. We're going to acquiesce. We're going to surrender to the winds and to the path. And we're going to go where we want to go. And they start changing course based upon their impression. And guess what? It doesn't work. The storm, any direction that they sense might be a safe landing spot, the storm changes its direction, the winds change, and takes them out even further to sea. They then come to the realization that Yonah's correct. The purpose, the message, and the goal of the storm is not to change course and go to a new destination, but is to bring an end to the lives of the people on board, specifically to Yonah. That is the machlekes. The machlekes apoyskim. Okay, many times in halacha, you have a machlekes. What is the message? You know, now it's a very dangerous thing. People know, unfortunately, there's a tragedy. Rachmana litzlan. So people today, sometimes people, I'll tell you why it happened. I'm going to tell you. You know why this happened? Talking during davening. I'm absolutely certain. And another person will say, no, sneers. And someone else will tell you it's because of the internet. And someone else will tell you it's because who knows what. What Chil Shabbos. And someone will say this. Okay, so we don't have Nevi'im today, right? We don't have prophets today to tell us the reason why. Here, we see here nothing. The more things change, the more things stay the same. Here on the ship, Hashem is sending a message. There is sakana. 70 peoples, representatives of 70 nations. There is great. What's Hashem's message? Machlokes ha'poskim. These newcomers to religion. These new bashkichim, they're telling us the message is change course. Don't travel to Tarshish. Tarshish is no good. Gotta go somewhere else. And Yonah says, no. Tarshish is gewaldig. Go to Tarshish. There's another reason. I'm the cause. Get rid of me. They disagree. What is the signal? What's Hashem's message? And they experiment. Malvin was an eye-opener. It's a real eye-opener in understanding what is taking place over here. Let's go back to the words of the Malvin. So, Rotsa Ein, Ritzot Elemar Ein, Ani, Reitzel, Loshuv, Vlil Lechas, Ladinve, Vimkein, Ein Asar, Kedil, Hashivein, Larzi, El Ladinve, Ki Asar, Bo, La Andoish, Oisi. The purpose of the story, the message is to punish me, Al-He'ovar, in regard, in reference to my past transgressions, Al-Shemorisi, S.P. Hashem, v'zeh yodea ani b'veirur. I am certain. She'ein hasar b'shvilchem la'anoish eschem al ma she'atem o'ilichem o'sil l'sarshish. Ki ein zem mikavonis Hashem rak b'shalich hasar agad la'zeh leichem la'anoish o'sil levad. V'loi b'shvilchem yinat the cause u'cha she'etbah b'ayom. When I will be cast overboard and die, yishtay k'ayom e'aleichem. Then you will be spared. Pasuk Yogimol. Why did they not do this right away? Possibly on the left side. They didn't trust Yonah. They didn't believe him. They want to go back to Yafo. If it's talking, we are correct, and Hashem wants us to change course, then Hashem will grant us siyata d'shmai to be successful in getting where we need to go. V'lo yocholu, they were unsuccessful. Yonah was correct. Ki ayom hoylech v'so'er achar sheyona lo isha b'shuva lehekim s'orol l'dmama, the sea was not silenced. Okay, now let's take a look at the Mamori Chazal. Let's go back to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Okay, back on the previous page. On the previous page, Pasuk, page 416. On 4:16, where it says, "You know, we have the pasuk that says Yudimul," but here is the Mamar Mechazal, "Vayomer Aleihem."
It's marked
Yud Aleph, but the pasuk is the pasuk in days. It appears to me there's a typo here, right? It appears to be a typo in the article. Vayomer
on the
wrong page as well. Okay, it's a double typo. Not only is it titled wrong, but it's also you can't go say that this is Rishon, because this was written, this was put together only last year or 2 years ago. So this appears to be a blatant error. What? That's right.
Did you get a discount?
No.
Vayoymer
aleihem se'uni v'hatiluni el hayam. Rabbi Yonah said, "Omer lohalach Yonah el la'abir atzme bayam." Yonah went on a suicide mission. Okay, here is a sugya of suicide. Rachman Litzlan, it's a very big topic. It's a big topic amongst the people who Rachman Litzlan deal with this issue. Suicide. Okay, so it says in Ma'abed Atzma Lada. So here we have in this topic of discussion, a very unpleasant topic, halachic topic. Is there any justification to commit suicide? A person is in a state of extreme pain. Is there any halachic justification? We all hear stories in the Holocaust of all the horrors that took place. Is there any justification? Shaul HaMelech committed suicide. I mean, what more do you want than that? Shaul HaMelech, he told his weapon carrier, what do they call it?
The armor bearer.
He told him, "Kill me. I'm giving you a direct order to kill me." And his weapon bearer said, "No, I'm not doing it. I don't care. I'm not doing it." So what did he do? He killed himself.
He put the sword down
and he fell on his sword. Shol HaMelech, the Bechir Hashem, he commits suicide. So what more do you want than that?
That's in the Holocaust.
What? I told you.
The Germans, you touched the electric. That's the only thing they let you do.
Rachman al-Azlan, and what about during the time of the Crusades? Not only did they take their own lives, they killed each other. They knew that in a few moments the Crusaders would come and would take away their children, and they would kill everyone. They took the lives of their own children. They viewed taking the lives of their children as if they're offering sacrifice. The time now, with Mamash, with all holding in the days of the Crusades. In Mitzrayim, we don't find they commit suicide. What?
Masada.
That Josephus was the last guy. He was supposed to kill himself. Okay, that's a very big mystery. They cast lots. One guy is going to kill everyone, and then when he finishes killing everyone, he kills himself.
And he didn't.
So why didn't he? That's the question. It's not so simple. Josephus, the big historian, Josephus was a Masada, was part of that group of Masada where they killed themselves. And he was the one, I don't know the exact details, who assisted in and he's the last guy. He's supposed to kill himself at the very end, and he didn't. So in the time of the First Crusades, this was halachically acceptable. Husbands would take the lives of their wives, their children, their horrors, not to be believed, and then they would take their own lives. And there were these horrible stories where the Crusaders were literally outside, they were passing through, and the parents would take the lives of their children, and then the Crusaders, for whatever reason, they just left. And they realized that it was not necessary. They took the lives of their children for no reason. And they live with this horror for the rest of their lives. And I mean, it's just not to be fathomed, to be understood, to be believed. So is there any justification for this type of approach? So here we have a Maimon Chazal. Rabbi Yonah Sonoi, Leholach Yonah Elo L'Abed Atzmo Bayam. Shenemar Vayomer Aleihem Se'uni V'Hatiluni El Hayom. Now this means, see, Rabbi Yonah over here is saying a chiddush that you would not say on your own. Yonah knew it would come to this. If you did not have this Maimon Chazal, and what is this source? I have no idea. Is this a tradition? Is it hinted to in the pasuk? It appears to be saying that when Yonah got on the ship on the dry land, and he told the sailors, here I'm paying for the entire voyage. Let's get going. He knew clear and well it would come to this. That the ship would go out to sail, it would be there would be a storm, and it would be bikuach nefesh, and he would acknowledge he is the source, and he would demand that, and he would commit suicide. They would throw him overboard. So Yonah here put himself in a situation where he's ma'abed atzmai lodas. And you'll argue, so why did he have to do it in such an elaborate way? Why could he just take his life on dry land? He has to go put them in sakana. So you can argue, I don't want to do it to myself. That if a person finds himself in a need where he has to give up to end his life, it should be indirect. It should not be, you should not be the one to push the button. Because here, Yonah, I'm not taking my life. I'm not allowed to. I feel that I can do it indirectly. How do I do it indirectly? I'll go on the ship. We'll go out into the yam. Hashem will be angry. There'll be a storm. And they'll cast lots. They'll figure out I'm the cause. And they will pick me up and throw me into the yam. Did I kill myself? No. I think they killed me. They did. Were they correct? Were they were allowed to, but I didn't do anything. So he was ma'abed atzmo lodas indirectly.
Okay.
It wasn't a direct suicide. He put himself in a situation where he knew his life would come to an end.
Suicide by a cop.
Right. Suicide by
a cop. They have a lot of people are like that. In other words, they don't have the nerve to kill themselves.
When they get into a fight,
they point the toy gun at the cop, knowing the cop will shoot.
Okay, wow, that's a frightening thing. So that's exactly what that exactly what he's doing over here.
And the reason of Shona Menef that suicide
right,
because he had
right, so what's the reason? You're saying something very frightening. You don't,
because David HaMelech was playing music therapy that pollute.
You just said that he killed because of a mental problem.
Yeah.
That means that it was justified because he had a mental illness thing in his life. You cannot say that. That's not what Chazal said. Chazal said it was because the simple. You could say all the things. The simple understanding is because if the Pelishtim would get a hold of him, they would torture him to death. He said another time, Chil Hashem. So this is a very big topic. What was the justification of Shaul HaMelech committing suicide? The simple understanding is torture. Torture. If he would have been taken alive by the Pelishtim, they would torture him. A person is not obligated to suffer torture. Chazal tells about Hananya, Mishol, and Azaria, that they allowed themselves to be thrown into a furnace. What would have been if Nebuchadnezzar would have said, I'm not throwing you into a furnace, I'm going to do to you what they're going to do in the future generations in the time of the Inquisition. We're going to put you on a bed and we're going to stretch you until your limbs come apart. We're going to pull out your fingernails one at a time. We're going to chop off one limb at a time, inch by inch. Then Chazal say, and they're a lot worse, so you should read some of what they did in the Inquisition. It's just not even to be believed. Even a human being could even come up with these ideas. I don't think it was ever as bad as the Inquisition. From the things that I've read, I don't remember, like during the time of the Chmelnytsky massacres, it was pretty cruel. They would take pregnant women, cut them open, take out their babies, and put in animals and sew them back up. Okay, they would put a cat or some rabbit and the things are just not to be believed. What took place even worse than what the Nazis did. Well, yeah, the experiments on people, medical experiments, not to be believed. In the time of the Inquisition, it would appear that was the worst. That was the pits. The things that they've done to people, what they invented special tools just to torture Jews. And they invented special chairs and tools just for the purpose.
They wrote the book on how to do it.
How to torture.
It's the largest volume in the Vatican. Is the best way to torture a Jew.
Not to be believed.
Yeah.
And there were Jews who went and did not succumb. They were Kabbal all the just this, not to be believed. Chazal tells us that Hananya, Mishael, the Azaria would not have given up. They would not have survived. They would have bowed down to the idol. If the Vuchad, it's Chazal. If Nebuchadnezzar would have taken Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, would have put them on the chair from the time of the Inquisition, they would macabre. They would say, "Okay, we bow down to the art. We can't take this anymore." He did them a favor. He said, "If you don't do it, I'll throw you into a fire. So we'll die an instant death. They'll die. How long will it take them to die in the fire? They'll die. They'll die 1, 2, 3." So that they were able. That they were able to do. So Shaul was no different. Shaul was no different. If the Pelishtim would have taken him alive, they would have tortured him to death. He was not obligated to suffer that torture. That's why he was permitted to take his life. That is one of many answers to how Shaul was justified in taking his life. Yeah.
Although I would have said that not just because his role as the
Melech. Exactly, Chil Hashem. That's another approach. Bezoyin to Klal Yisrael.
There's an article of Rav Shimon Shkop, who was an Israeli soldier in the 50s, who was captured, before the Israelis were captured by the Syrians. And they tortured them, and separately, they told this guy that the rest are dead, and you're next, unless you give us the secret. So he hung himself, and he left a note saying, "Hitabadati lo bagadati." And I committed suicide.
By the Nari Bell.
And I didn't say anything.
I did not reveal the secrets.
It was revealed
what?
They didn't kill the other three. So when they released the body for a trade, they released it with the knowledge.
Okay, so you see, it's another reason. Maybe Shaul had state secrets. Okay? That would endanger the lives of other people. So a person knows enough torture, they're going to get it, even if you're not sure, it's even a suffix. I don't want them to torture me and play around with my mind, who knows the techniques they have to play with my mind, to reveal, they can hypnotize them. We don't know all these different techniques that they make use of, besides torture. Other techniques. What? Or what they say, if you read the literature, there's one thing that everyone will always give into. If you have Rahman al-Litzlan, they would take a child in front of a parent and they would say, "If you're not going to tell us, we're going to torture your child. We're going to torture your child." That is something which has been proven, unfortunately, that's like the ultimate torture. People will you could torture me. That's not even that's not so simple. But you're going to torture my child? All right, you know what? I'll give up whatever you want not to torture my children. So in those situations, the person feels it's safer for me to take my own life. And that Shaul did it. You cannot deny the facts. And it says in the Pasuk that Shaul asked his weapon carrier, bearer, to kill him, and he did not, and he killed himself. Here is another critical Maimer Chazal in this extremely painful and horrific topic of Ibud Atzmai Ladas. Rabbi Yonasan Oimer Leholach Yoina Ella Le'abed Atzmai Bayam, and it changes the entire story of Yona. It's not like we think. We taught this story in Yeshiva Katana with white gloves, that Yona was a Navi, whatever they tell, and he got on a ship, he ran away, he didn't want to go on the mission. It's a very dark story when you tell someone, Yonah now went out to kill himself. Hashem told him to do something, and Yonah says, "I want to commit suicide." The whole story changes. The whole attitude, it's a dark story. It's a whole thing, it's a different story. You don't even want to tell this to a child. Even to put in their mind a concept. There's something called killing yourself. But that's what it says. That's what, at least Rabbi Yonah said, and we like to, you know, be very... to shelter children from Mamori Chazal that are very disturbing. But as you mature, yeah, you have to face the reality and understand there are many dimensions. I mean, obviously, not every Chazal indicates that this is the Ikor, but if there is such a Maimah Chazal, we have to take into consideration that there is some truth to this. We find all of the Nevim were willing to give up their lives. But obviously, they're very different. This is a very scary theme of suicide for different reasons. Moshe, Moimer, V'yatoim tisach ha'tasim v'mayin, mecheni no misifr ha'sher kosofta. Now, wait a minute. That's not suicide. That just, don't write, I don't want to be part of this. Doesn't say suicide. V'imkocha ata, but we do have another pasuk where Moshe da'ataka did say this. V'yata, v'imkocha at oiseli, hargeni no horoig. I'm not committing suicide. You, Hashem, you take my life. Moshe's not committing suicide. I don't want to see the Jewish people suffer. So therefore, Hashem, I'm asking you to take my life. It says, what have they done? It says by Shaul. Doesn't say that was it, but David Ma'amer Hinei. Why is it David? This is really Shaul. Let's see. Anoichi Chotasi V'Anoichi Havesi V'Eilech Hatzayin Me'osu Tihino Yodcha Bi Uveves Avi Habachol Mokim Atem Moitzev. I'm not sure that passage. It seems like that David said this. That David said, "Take me, Tihino Yodcha Bi Uveves Avi. I am responsible." We have to go back and study that passage. I'm not sure what that means. Okay, so this is a very powerful Maimer Chazal that we do find that all of the Nevi'im and the Avos were willing to give up their life for the better for Klal Yisrael. How they did it? Was it direct? Was it indirect? For what was the justification? What was the context? Obviously, every single situation is different and needs to be studied, but the principle does exist. The principle does exist, and we see it here in this pasuk.
Okay, we'll stop there. Now, we could say, but are we to be punished before me?